In the fabled land of Northern California, nestled in the Valley of Sacramento, two friends begin a journey to enlighten the world about their experience living life as a Xenial. But what is a Xenial, you may ask? If you wish to know, then follow them on their adventures.
Welcome to the Xenial Chronicles. This is James.
This is Mike.
And, well, we were finally able to work out to be on a Monday together to, not together, just online together, to record again. Because we've been pushing it back to, what, Tuesdays and Wednesdays for the past couple of weeks?
It's
been crazy lately.
Yeah, it's been nuts. I've got a couple of things that I've been working on. It's just been hard to set up a schedule. School, too, right? For you?
School, not so much of an issue. I'm able to work that out fairly decently. But I just want to comment that your wife did post something last night on Facebook about the Corona, you being half of Chronosode Games and Rolling Note Music and all the other stuff. But I didn't see a mention of the podcast in there. So I just want to say I take some slight personal offense on that fact. I just want to comment that in there.
No. I think it's funny because I saw the post afterwards.
Have words about it.
I saw the post afterwards, I guess, and it had it on there, but I didn't see it when she posted it.
Maybe she added it later. Anyway, it's been kind of freaky. And again, we're getting into the freaky time of year anyway.
Yeah.
With Christmas coming on. I was thinking about the fact that last year we had our roughly around this time we had our Black Friday discussion, and the fact that like Black Friday is not even going to be a thing, and this will be the first time in years that Black Friday is not a thing. People aren't leaving their houses after Thanksgiving dinner to go get the immediate Black Friday sales. Cause I got to get, you got to get that 55 inch TV for $168.
Right.
Cause that's important. Even though there may be like one of them at your Walmart, you got to be there to get it and rush past everybody else. Cause Christmas just won't be happy if you don't have that 55 inch TV. Which I will say I'm guilty. I used to, I would occasionally go out on the Black Fridays, but I would get like one or two items that there would typically be a lot of, and I probably didn't even need to go out on Black Friday to get them.
Right.
Cause it'd be available the whole weekend, but especially not going out like Thursday night after Thanksgiving dinner. I shouldn't have had to go out to get them, but they were like the one or two items that I wanted to make sure to get for the kids. But yeah, that doesn't even exist. They're having month long Black Friday now. Which is just kind of like,
it's Black November now.
Which, I think is helpful when you consider they tried to focus all of their, let's get into the black, hence the name, let's make sure that we get above negative in our business in a single weekend. Come on, spread it out a little more. Of course, that does mean that there's more reason now for them to start the damn Christmas music on November 1st, which
right.
It already has. You know that anybody that was working in the store the overnight, because most of the stores aren't letting customers in overnight now. They have people in an overnight crew doing the work.
Right.
They're working overnight, and it's a computer program that for the most part controls the music in all those stores.
Right.
And October 31st, it hits midnight, and suddenly Mariah Carey comes on. It's like, oh, damn it. Why?
Dude.
Why already? Why?
Okay, so I'm a little guilty this time of sharing Christmas stuff a little early. But I heard it, and it was so good that I had to. So normally, I'm just like, stay the hell away from the Christmas stuff until like halfway through November. Or like,
was this the one you sent me?
Yes, I think so. So okay. It was... The reason why I shared it was because it was such a twist. So,
before you say something about it, if it's something like what you're talking about,
right?
Then it's not really a Christmas thing per se. This is taking what it's doing is it's taking the Christmas thing and parodying it in an appropriate fashion.
Right.
So like it's not really like you're sharing Christmas stuff. It's you're sharing a parody of Christmas stuff. And technically you could do that all year long.
Right.
Because it's about what parody does. You don't just have to do it at the specific time.
Right, exactly.
But go on,
okay.
Continue.
So normally anybody who knows me knows that I am like, I hold off on the Christmas music until Thanksgiving is over. Like, especially like December or anything past Thanksgiving, dude, it's time to put up the tree. It's time to do the, it's time to do the Christmas thing after Thanksgiving is done. Like, that's my deal. I can enjoy the Christmas music. And me, coming from a retail background, like, I spend a lot of time not really digging on Christmas too much because it was always like this. If you deal with high stress as a shopper, imagine dealing with high stress as a retail worker, dealing with so many of those people that are fighting each other while you're trying to make sure that you don't get sued or get complained or even attacked for not having an item in or not having enough of it or X, Y, Z.
I can say that, like, other than Blockbuster, which it was just, you know, more people, more grandparents renting videos for their and DVDs for their grandkids that had no idea what their grandkids liked.
Yeah.
And or video game renting video games for their grandkids and have no idea what their grandkids like or what they should be playing.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, Blockbuster was fairly easier on Christmas time. We'd get more stuff in and there'd be some sales and whatnot, and then you'd have the idiots who would show up like on Christmas Eve at like 7 o'clock at night wanting Christmas movies. It's like, dude, don't you think that they've already all been rented?
Right.
All of them?
Exactly.
Every single one. You know, yeah, those, but, those were fairly easy. And luckily when I worked at the other place I worked at where they make you wear an orange apron, I worked in departments in that place where they were not departments you went to at Christmas time.
Right. Now,
the areas that were scary at that store, were the garden area, which is where garden took care of all, you know, outside outdoor garden stuff.
Right.
But they also took care of all of like the lights for outside and Christmas trees you know, inflatable things and whatever. So they got a bunch of stuff.
Right.
And then like hardware, you didn't even want to walk near hardware with your orange apron on because you had wives in there buying stuff for their husbands and having no idea what they're supposed to be getting.
That would make sense. Because, especially at that time.
Because it's like a guy going to Bed Bath and Beyond or Bath and Body Works and trying to buy stuff for their wife.
Right, exactly.
Most of the time, they're not going to know especially during that time frame. They did not know what the heck to get the other person. Well, I think he's got a drill like this. What brand is it? I don't know. It's blue.
Right.
Yeah. Thanks. That really helps me a lot.
Exactly.
So and I worked in blinds and decor. So, or blinds and wallpaper, decor department. So nobody gets blinds or wallpaper for Christmas. Then I worked in flooring. Nobody buys flooring for Christmas. And then I worked in millworks, which is doors and windows.
Yeah.
Nobody buys doors and windows for Christmas.
Exactly.
So I was very lucky that for the most part, I avoided almost any Christmas shoppers during my time working in retail because they, again, Blockbuster was fairly easy. And then the other place was just... I just wasn't in the departments to deal with that. So I kind of got lucky, but the music was still pervasive. But anyway, we're talking about, get back to the original subject, this thing that you shared.
Right. So I don't think that I have discussed my my affinity for mashups. I don't know if anybody knows what mashups are.
You have with me, sir.
I have with you. I'm not sure if I've done it on the podcast. So for everybody listening, a mashup is when you take the music for one song and like the vocals for another song and you mash them together and they're two separate songs, but they're in key with each other or something like that.
And sometimes like they have the same timing. And sometimes you even use part of the music from one song. Like you have two songs, part of the music from song A and part of the music from song B, and you mix them up in different portions. You'll have song A's verse music and then song B's chorus music. And then again, varying vocals where it'll lead in from part of a vocal from song A into a part of a vocal from song B.
Exactly.
To make it just, it's, and usually they're, like he said, in the same key, roughly the same beat, something like that, some way that they can kind of fit together. By the way, anybody that ever watched the TV series Glee or the Pitch Perfect movies, you understand mashups because those are in all of those things. Pretty sure Mike never watched Glee or Pitch Perfect.
No, I haven't seen either one of those, but I know exactly what you're talking about.
I've seen both of them extensively. I love the Pitch Perfect movies. So that's why I'm using them as examples of, perfect. Of what people would know them from.
That's perfect. The biggest difference, that's actually a wonderful example, because that's literally what that is. It's mashing up two songs, or in that case, that would be a tertiary artist or group of artists covering a mashup of two songs at the same time. The types of mashups I listen to, which are hilarious, are when they take the original files from both songs and they mash them together. Like the vocals for Never Gonna Give You Up by Rick Astley mashed with the backing music for Smells Like Teen Spirit. That's a really popular example that showed up all over the internet like 5 years ago. But the most recent one blew my friggin' socks off when I heard it, and I think I heard it like the day after Halloween. Immediately I start sending it to my friends because it was so dumb. It is a mashup of the backing music for All I Want for Christmas Is You from Mariah Carey, mashed with the vocal track from For Whom the Bell Tolls by Metallica, and it just does not sound like it should fit.
Honestly, I liked it.
I loved it. It doesn't sound like it should fit. That's the point. It's going to like just mess with your brain, but I suggest that you find it if you can. I may link it. I'll try to link it when I put the podcast up on the page in the description, but it's worth every freaking second. It's so good. So I love that kind of stuff. That's the kind of stuff I listen to. That's my favorite part about Christmas is just parody mashup music or anything like that. I'm a big fan of like Bob Rivers. I think I've mentioned him before.
His guy.
Christmas stuff. Oh, dude. He's good. But that's honestly, and for me as someone who's had
he's the one that did the Iron Man Santa Claus, right?
Yes. Yes, he's the one that did that. Oh, yeah.
Making sure I was thinking of the right guy. I was like, I know that guy. I like that guy. I was making sure I was thinking of the right guy.
Oh, and there's so many of them, too. The AC/DC one, Jingle Hell's Bells, the Manger 6, Motel 6 commercial parodies. Like, he does so much.
Yeah, see, I used to not mind the Christmas music when I was working.
Right.
Because, it just really didn't bother me that much. It bothers me now because I think I know why it bothers me now, and I think it's the reason why it bothers a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
Is I feel like one of my favorite holidays gets short shrift anymore. It's like it's the lead up to Halloween, and everybody's wanting to expand Halloween into like September 1st starts, and suddenly, hey, we're gearing up for Halloween. It's like, bitch, it ain't for 2 months.
Right.
Seriously, it's at the very end of October.
Exactly.
You don't get to have all of September and October leading up to Halloween. You need to cool your jets and calm the hell down. And so Halloween is done, and suddenly and Halloween's not even done really. They're like the day of Halloween. The stores are already pulling the candy off of the shelves, and they're already getting set to set up all the Christmas stuff. They even have an aisle or two that had all the costumes in it that they've been able to reduce down to less aisles that they've already started putting the Christmas stuff up in.
Yep.
And it's like
right next to them too. Nice
because
right next to them too. Like there was this, if I can interrupt for a second on, I swear it was this year on like the 20th of October, I saw a Santa inflatable sleigh right next to the 12-foot Home Depot skeleton. It was dumb, dude. Yeah.
No, that's the thing is though, so I have some love for it because it helps to be able to, when people are on a budget, when people don't have a whole lot of money, like the situation that I'm in, got a family with kids, you know, we have things that we need to take care of with that, gifts to buy, you know, whatever. It's nice to be able to have a little bit more lead up time than just the month of December.
Yeah.
I got, you know, a couple of months to be able to buy certain things. And I'm smart. I buy certain things throughout the year, but there are certain things that only come out at Christmas time that you want to get.
Yeah.
And so it's nicer to have that. It does give me 2 months to indulge whatever, candies and cookies and specials like that you don't normally get year round. It's harder to find, you know, them little, the tins of cookies, butter cookies mm-hmm. that, you know, grandmas use for their sewing stuff.
Yeah.
After you eat all the cookies, mm-hmm. I love those cookies. My wife loves those cookies. So like it's one of those things that so there are some people that are like, really, you eat those things? Hell yes, I do. Of course, I'm the weird one that eats candy. I'm the one that eats candy corn too. So you know, I will admit I got some weird food items that I'm good with that I look forward to. Candy canes, I love peppermint. So like, you know, when it's candy cane season, it's always nice. You get different flavors of different things. It's like looking forward to Easter so you can get your Cadbury eggs. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
So having 2 months for that is kind of nice. But like, I'm starting to feel like we're having this problem of, look at it from like a family scenario. Okay.
Okay.
You feel me?
Okay. I'm gonna follow you. You lead the way.
Okay. Look at this from a family scenario. It's like Halloween is the oldest child, right?
Okay.
Right? Got all the cool stuff with the costumes and whatnot. Kind of leads the way with things. It leads the way into the season. And you got the baby Christmas that everybody's doting on, everybody's waiting for. We all love the baby. Thanksgiving is the middle child now. I'm thinking Thanksgiving's getting some middle child syndrome. Everybody paying attention to Halloween coming up. Everybody waiting for Christmas to come up. Thanksgiving in the middle is like, oh yeah, that's the day we have turkey. Gotta go to grandma.
Thanksgiving, dude. Thanksgiving's even the day that you start seeing all the Christmas movies on local TV.
Air and stuff. Christmas movies are already all over the TV, man.
Oh yeah, they're out hella early this year. That's like, been a deal for like the last Lifetime, few years too.
Yeah, the Lifetime Network. I think the Lifetime Network was looking like, okay, everybody at home right now. They all been sitting at home for like 8 months or something. We're just going to flood the Christmas movies early, and we're going to flood them 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, because we've made like 500 new Christmas movies.
Yep.
Because we can make them on like a budget of $2 million or less. Mm-hmm. We have D-list actors. Occasionally you throw in a B-lister there, and people are going to go nuts for it. Is Candace Cameron available? She's not doing the Fuller House thing right now, right? Put her ass in one. And so it's like, you see the preview for it, and it's like, hey, didn't that guy, wasn't he like a boyfriend of so-and-so for like a 3 or 4 episode arc like 2 years ago? Yep, that's what happens. They're a boyfriend on a major TV series for 3 or 4 episodes, and then they get put in as the main love interest in the Christmas movies. And by the way, he's going to be in like 10 Christmas movies this year, just so you know.
Yeah, exactly.
And so the market is flooded with them, which, again, we're looking for something to make things better. Especially considering that today, Monday, the day that we're recording this, new orders have come out to try to stop people from doing things again. We're getting restricted yet again here in the state of California.
Oh, yeah.
We've gone purple. They're shutting down schools again, unless the kids are young or special needs. But all the rest of the schools that have been on this, you know, the cohort program, the 2 days a week moving program, they're all being sent home and shut down again.
Yep.
And part of the reason why is the impending holiday of Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Because even though we're dealing with a holiday where we're all still under this pandemic, and we're still dealing with this pandemic, and we're not supposed to be meeting up, it's the holidays. We have to meet with our families. So people are still planning on going out of state to meet with family and spend time with them. It's like, people, are you dumb?
Yeah.
Give up one Thanksgiving. Yep. Give up one Christmas with the family. We teach a book in high school called The Diary of Anne Frank. Those people were hidden in an attic for years, and you can't miss one Thanksgiving and one Christmas?
Oh my goodness.
For years in just an attic. They weren't even able to go outside and shop. They had food, whatever food could be brought to them. Why? Because otherwise they would go out and die. Now, admittedly, we're not under the same risk of dying that they were, but come on. These people spent years in one attic. Stay in your houses, damn it. Don't meet with your family. God. Use the technology to talk to your family. You don't need to be in the same room with them and run the risk of getting this disease and spreading it further. Come on, people.
I mean, being hunted down by racists probably isn't the same as this virus.
Well, no, but still. But still, the fact that this family lived the Frank family lived in an attic for years. I think they were there for like 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, they were. It was. And
they couldn't go out. They couldn't look out the window. They couldn't go outside at all. Years of never being able to leave an attic. All of them together. And we have our houses that we can live in. Some of us have apartments that we live in. But we still do get to go out to the grocery store. We get to go outside and be in our yards. We can at least do that. These people couldn't leave an attic. You ever been up in an attic? Guess what? They're not comfortable. They were in an attic. And no, it's not like the attic on some houses where it's just like a crawl space. It was like the attic that you see like on the Geico commercial or whatever it is, where they go check out the attic and there's like weird mannequins and stuff that the previous owner left behind. At least it was like a halfway furnished attic. You could stand up straight in the damn thing, but still, it was an attic of a house. That's it. These people did it for years. We right. can do this and not have to. I mean, they didn't have computers where they could actually, you know, voice chat with their family members. No. They couldn't even write letters to people. She had to write a damn diary. No TV, no cell phones. Probably a limited number of books to read, hence the reason she wrote a diary. She had nothing else to do. Come on, people. We can deal with this.
Good Lord.
Anyway.
I'm not touching this.
You don't have to. I'm just saying this is one of my frustrations with it. Like, oh, we're so oppressed because we have to stay at home and we have to wear masks. Y'all, people don't understand
that. Okay, that level. I can get behind. That I can get behind. I know what you're talking about. I would say that the the comparison
I'm,
is
no, hey, I'm somewhat saying, extreme, I'm
but
saying,
you are right. I mean, the obviously, like, and I'm not on this. If anybody thinks they're being oppressed for staying at home because a virus is out right now, like. No, that's not what's happening. No. That's not what's happening. Well, it's not okay.
What I'm saying is we teach about this family that did this, and yet we're complaining about something that is such a minor inconvenience in the I mean, if the Frank family heard people complaining because they can't meet with their families on Thanksgiving because of a virus, and they're like, okay, so you can't see them at all. Oh no, we could talk to them on the phone. We could get our computers out and FaceTime them and stuff and talk to them that way.
Yeah.
So you can see them and talk to them. Yeah. What is wrong with you damn people? You can see and talk to your family. We didn't have anything. No phones, no computers, no nothing.
True.
And y'all are complaining. Y'all are entitled. That's what you are. But anyway.
Boy,
I'm just saying. Sorry. With the upcoming holidays, I mean, I've made it very, very clear to anybody in my family that my house is basically off limits. Ain't nobody coming over for any reason.
No, I get it.
There better be an emergency. I literally have there are two members of the family that I would let come to the house, and I'm not going to disclose the reason why for that. They're the only ones that I would consider letting come to the house. And there's a very good reason. It's just not my reason to be able to talk about.
Right.
Everybody else, it's like, no. I have sisters. They have kids. So I have nieces and nephews. Well, nieces and a nephew. And I will be meeting up with my sisters in public places so that we're not by anybody's house. They ain't coming to mine. Even to be outside, I'm not going to be heading over to theirs and then want to invite me inside. Because I don't know what 100% what their protocols have been. So we're going to meet somewhere. I'll be masked up. I'll give them the gifts that I have for the kids. And I'll be heading home. And that's the way that I'm planning on handling Christmas. For Thanksgiving, normally we do invite some people over. Not this year. This year, it's all about me and my turkey.
You know what? Tash and I just left. We went shopping. Like when we go shopping for like the entire 2 month period, or for an entire like month or 2 months worth of food. So we just get all of the food and stay the hell home as much as we can.
Which I understand in your scenario, you have two of you.
Yes.
You have a fairly decent sized refrigerator and a fairly new refrigerator.
Yeah.
It's good. It's got a lot of space and you have a chest freezer.
Yep.
So you have enough room to be able to do that. You have pretty decent sized cabinets. Pantry cabinet there to be able to keep stuff in. So you two can very easily buy more than enough food for two people for 2 months.
Yeah.
Definitely. I have seven people in my household.
Oh yeah, no. And I'm not trying to discount that. All I was trying to get two.
So I wish I could go shopping once every 2 months, because that would be awesome.
I know,
but it's not even. There's no possibility of that. Plus, there's also the milk thing. We go through milk really, really fast.
Ooh,
and
you guys
don't go through a whole lot of milk.
Yeah,
you guys mainly do fakey milk.
We do fakey milk here. We're totally cool with it. Well, Tash started picking up actually lactaid, so we have real milk with the lactose out of it, because it makes her feel sick. So
still fakey milk.
That's not, no, it's real milk, man. It's actually real. Uh-huh. Lactaid eggnog tastes like real eggnog. It has the same taste and consistency and flavor. It's just more expensive.
Have you been lured by the spicy milk too?
Spicy milk?
Yes, the spicy milk.
Oh, dude, spicy milk's awesome.
Interestingly enough, spicy milk. I will tell a story. It'll get me in trouble, but I don't care. It's been years since I had spicy milk.
Uh-huh.
And at the time that I had it last, I just didn't like the thickness and whatever. It just wasn't sitting with me well.
But did you try lactose-free?
No, because lactose is good and I love it.
I don't know what that means.
Anyway, my wife had never really had any eggnog.
I'm sorry, like in my head, just before you go through with this, I am just imagining you trying to extract and drink pure lactose.
Anyway.
like a lab in your basement.
This, I don't have a basement. If I had a basement, you know what would be in it? Not a lab.
Okay. In your attic or
anyway. Whatever. No, that's where the Frank family is.
Oh, no. Anyway. No! Stop it!
you brought it there.
Anyway, I didn't bring it there.
this year, my wife decided she was going to try the spicy milk. And she did. And the lure of the spicy milk was strong.
The spice.
She could not get away from it. Yes, the spice had to flow, because it must flow. And it did. Oh, dear God, it did.
The spice.
Spicy milk after spicy milk. But she realized spicy milk has a whole lot of calories in it.
Like
a crap ton of calories.
It does.
So she's like, let's see if we can find a way to not do all the calories, but still be able to have spicy milk.
So she found fake milk alternatives.
She found a soy spicy milk.
Yes.
Which tasted like spicy milk.
Yes.
But was about as thick as water.
Yeah, it's not as thick.
And so it did not feed the spicy milk demon.
Understandable. Understandable.
So now every time we're at the store since then, this happened again about the beginning of November.
Yeah.
So actually it was still in October. It was in the middle of October that it happened. It's actually been longer than that. Every time we go to the store now, which is our once a week trip to the store, she eyeballs the spicy milk and she asks me, hey, you want me to get some more spicy milk? Cause I tried it again this year. And this year my taste buds were like, yes, yes. Now you are cool with spicy milk again.
Ah, understood.
Because, you know, people go through different changes. I mean, there was a time in my life that I was, you know, green beans were available for me to eat, and I would eat them when I was kind of forced to at various relatives' houses. But I wasn't really overly fond of them, and yet I love green beans now. I love Brussels sprouts. I love, you know, asparagus. Because, you know, as we've discussed before, taste change.
Right.
Things that you enjoy change to some degree. Some things stay the same, but some things change. So if there's something that you didn't like, it may be worth your effort to try it again, because you never know. In a few years, you might like it. And also in a few years, you might still think it's disgusting. At least if flavor is the component.
Yeah, give it a
if
shot.
It's, you know, if it's other things like consistency or the actual acknowledgement of what you're eating, like, I don't know that there's ever going to be a flavor with lobster that will make me get over the fact that it's a giant ocean-going cockroach. Nothing, I think, will get me past that fact. And I just don't want to eat cockroach.
Understood.
But anyway, I think you were talking about you were shopping
yes.
for 2 months or whatever when you were out shopping.
Yeah, we were shopping, and, well, this shopping went... Okay, so, God, It's like all the setup, and we went way off. Okay, so the shopping we were doing, we go out and we shop for a bunch. Well, you know, apparently Winco has deals where if you get like over $100 worth of groceries, you get a free turkey. I did not know this. We found all the turkeys, and we have like a 20-pound turkey we're going to split between two people, and it's going to be amazing. We're going to have all the turkey forever.
I have an idea for you.
What's your idea?
Oh my God. We were actually in Winco doing our grocery shopping, and we just didn't have enough space to put a turkey right now. We're going to buy it next week. Friday. Uh-huh. Or this coming Friday. Cuz we didn't have enough room to put a turkey for 2 weeks. We can do one for 1 week because it's got to defrost anyway in the fridge. So and then it's gotta be in the brine solution for at least 24 hours before I cook it.
Right.
So, I mean, there's all that involved. Now here's the thing. Okay. Cause you have a lot of turkey left over, and we normally get somewhere between a 20 and a 25 pounder because, well, we have a lot of people that are here to eat it, even if we don't have extra people, and we love leftover turkey. So here's what I got. Everybody listening, pay attention to this, because this is what I do with my leftover turkey every year now. It has become something that is demanded from the household that we do.
Okay. Okay.
Because, you know, you have turkey leftovers. There's lots of different things you can do. You can make pot pie with them, which I've done before. Absolutely amazing. You have the turkey sandwiches, which, by the way, if you are eating leftover turkey from Thanksgiving in a turkey sandwich, the only acceptable bread for that is either leftover rolls from Thanksgiving, no matter what type of rolls they are, as long as they're the leftover rolls from Thanksgiving, uh-huh. or frickin' white bread.
Okay.
Normally, I wouldn't say white bread is like necessary, but if you're eating leftover turkey, white bread, leftover rolls. That's what you need to make an appropriate leftover turkey sandwich.
Okay. Just yep. Saying. Yep. Understood. Yeah, just I'm right saying. There with you.
But here's what you do. You take equal parts. So if you're going to do a cup of each. If you're going to do two cups of each, whatever. It's just equal parts, okay?
Okay.
Equal parts turkey, leftover stuffing. Because hopefully you're a smart enough person that you don't put your stuffing inside your bird and make it a disgusting yep. mess of bacteria.
Yep. Nope.
So
stuffing's outside equal parts, of bird.
Equal parts leftover turkey, mm-hmm. leftover stuffing. Mm-hmm. And it's actually best if you're doing it with like cheap box stuffing like Stove Top or whatever. Mm-hmm. But you can use whatever stuffing you make for your stuffing you can use. Because it's about filler and texture.
Right.
And then equal parts leftover mashed potatoes. Okay.
Right. Okay. I see where you're going with this.
So like a cup of each of these.
Yep.
And I really recommend, this is one of your places where you really want to use a mixture of light meat and dark meat. I like to go half and half at least.
Right.
Okay. Cause some people are the dark meat fans. Some people aren't, but this is the type of application. Like especially if you do like a pot pie with it, mm-hmm. always use the dark meat in the pot pie. Mm-hmm. It's so much better in a pot pie. It has so much more flavor and it holds up better for your pot pie usage. But this is one of half and half, light meat and dark meat. Good way to get rid of it. Okay?
Right.
You mix those all together in a bowl. Make sure they're mixed up really good. It'll be kind of sticky, stuck together. Okay?
Okay.
Now, you have to buy one other thing beforehand. Technically, two other things beforehand to prep for this the right way. One of them is you have to have an extra can of the cranberry sauce. The jellied cranberry sauce.
Yep.
Not the ones with actual cranberries in it, just the jellied cranberry sauce.
Right.
Okay? You're going to turn that into with some apple cider vinegar and sugar. And I don't have the exact ratios for you. That's the part that I don't do. But I know you can find this online.
I was going to say, do you just guess it out or what?
I'm not sure what the exact ratios are. But again, if you once I finish telling you what the whole thing is, if you look it up online, there's like three or four websites that'll tell you.
Ah, okay.
But you turn that into a cranberry sweet and sour sauce.
Oh, okay.
Because you put it in a pan. You actually put the jelly cranberry sauce in a pan with some apple cider vinegar and sugar, and you basically melt it down into a sauce, and it becomes a sweet and sour cranberry sauce.
Right, exactly. I know where you're coming from.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing you have to buy ahead of time, wonton wrappers.
Okay.
Because what you're going to do is you're going to take this turkey and stuffing and mashed potato mixture, and you're going to spoon some of it out into the wonton wrapper, wrap it up, and you're going to have little, like, Thanksgiving egg rolls that you dip and the cranberry sweet and sour sauce.
Whoa, okay.
It's like all the flavors of Thanksgiving in one frickin' bite.
Whoa, that is...
They are amazing.
Thanksgiving egg rolls. Okay. I think we're going to do some more shopping before. Because we don't have wontons.
Yes.
But we could do like most everything else. Yeah.
Most people don't.
We can just run out and get some wontons and just go that. Do you deep fry them too?
Yeah.
Oh, well, hell yeah.
You don't necessarily have to deep fry them. I pan fry them.
Oh, okay. But just, they can be fried.
Just like a half inch at best. Yeah. Less than a half inch of oil.
Yeah.
And you just fry one side, flip it over, fry the other side. Yeah. You want to fry the wrappers for sure. But that, because that heats the stuff back up.
Thanksgiving inside. Egg rolls.
But they are so amazing. We've been doing it for like 5 or 6 years now.
That sounds fantastic. Like I want to try this really bad.
The family actually likes those more than, well, I wouldn't say more, equal to Thanksgiving dinner.
That's amazing.
For sure.
That sounds amazing. Like, yeah, I want to do that. Like, really bad. That sounds fantastic. So, we're definitely trying that.
Anybody listening, look it up on, Google it or whatever, Thanksgiving egg rolls, and it should help you with the recipe for what to do with the cranberry sauce. I know that my wife has it, so she'll send it over. She'll send a link over to your wife or send it to me, and then I'll send it to you or your wife.
Cool.
So that you guys have it for the one that we do. But, yeah, it's amazing. I'm hungry now. And we haven't even had our Thanksgiving. We're next week is still the Thanksgiving episode. We're already touching on that and haven't gotten to it yet.
Right, I know.
Anyway, we're going to take a break here. We'll take a break here.
Okay.
I have an announcement of kind of some personal import when we come back.
Okay.
And then if I don't dominate the discussion with my announcement, you have a little bit of an update on a story that we did, a thing we talked about earlier. Was it this year?
Last year
that we talked about last year.
Yeah.
There's a new little update that just happened literally today.
Yeah. Literally today it happened. So finally I told people I'd be keeping up on it and, some new news broke. So I wanted to share that.
All right. So when we're back in a moment, little announcement from me and then Mike giving us kind of an update on an old story.
Yeah, sounds good.
All right.
Hey friends, this is Mike from the Xennial Chronicles reminding you to subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can also follow us on Twitter and Facebook at Zenchron, spelled Xenchron, to keep up to date on all things TXC. And please check out our official website, thexennialchronicles.com, or if that's too much to type, zenchron.com. Thanks again for listening, and now back to the show.
And we are back.
All right.
Been an interesting little break. It's funny sometimes what happens during our breaks. Sometimes we just talk about random things.
Yeah.
Sometimes I reiterate things that I've said on the first half of things, or Mike does. Sometimes I reveal things that I can't really say during the podcast because either it's not a story of mine to tell, or it's additional information, or it's just a little bit too wacko. I mean, Mike was already freaking out about me talking about the Frank family. So you never know how wacko James is going to end up. But this is just like I said before the break, the story that we're going to be that Mike is going to be updating on. It's fresh. It happened today, and even since he sent me the original information about it earlier today, and we're like, hey, we can talk about this today. There's been more things that have come out, and he was just finishing up research on it, and like freaking himself out with how much research there is. So this is going to be good.
Yeah.
I'm going to keep my announcement that I kind of had.
Oh.
Okay. I'm going to try to keep it short. I can let you be able to run with what sounds like. By the way, he didn't give me any information.
Right.
As far as what was happening. So the information is all going to come to me kind of fresh and brand new, which is we do that often. For you listening, I won't give Mike all the information of stuff. When Mike sounds like James is dropping information, he probably is genuinely surprised and confused because I haven't told him ahead of time. Likewise, when Mike telling a story and James is like, wait, what about this? What about this? That's because James is confused because we don't necessarily tell each other everything.
Right.
And by the way, when either one of us is able to guess and predict what's happening, that's just because we're smart. One of us might be smarter, but still, we are smart and we can figure things out and guess.
True, true.
I'm the smarter one. Anyway.
Okay.
So this is kind of, this is just a fun announcement. Today is the 16th of November, 2020. At least when we're recording this, you're listening to this on November 19th at the very earliest, November 19th, mm-hmm. 2020.
Yes.
As you're listening to this on November 19th, 2020, I want to tell you what I was doing 18 years ago on November 19th.
Oh, okay.
So that would be November 19th, 2002. Okay. I had just purchased Star Wars Episode II, Attack of the Clones. Just come out on DVD.
Right.
I had purchased it.
You know that date. That's insane.
Huh?
I said, you know that date. That's insane.
Well, there's a reason why.
Uh-huh.
I was set to watch it with my beleaguered wife, who still wasn't quite understanding of my love of all of these geeky sci-fi things. I hadn't converted her yet. She still was just indulging my whims. She had seen the movie in the theater with me, again, indulging me.
Right.
Not really a huge fan, but whatever. She knew that when I bought the DVD, she knew I was going to be watching it immediately because that's what I was going to do. I invited over one of my good friends, probably one of my best friends in the world, to watch it with us because he had seen episode one in the theater with me. He had seen episode one when I had when it first came out on VHS and DVD to be able to watch, you know, after it'd been out in the theater. Uh-huh. So this is before, of course, you could find movies on the internet easily to watch right after they came out in the theater, or as it is now, just pay money to watch a movie on the day it's released in the theater.
Right. Yeah. Nowadays.
So he was there watch it with us, and this is our tech guy, Rob.
Yeah.
He was there watching it with us, and I distinctly remember, because this is one of those things that, per our discussion in the first half of this, it's one of those things that only comes out around Christmas time. It's a food item. My wife was eating the white fudge covered Oreos. I don't know if you've ever had those or if you've seen them at the store, Mr. Mike.
We just saw them. They had white fudge covered Oreos, and we were extremely tempted to pick them up, but we did not.
It's a regular Christmas item. That's kind of how we, you know, you gauge when the Christmas stuff is there. At least we did back then, was when the white fudge Oreos show up. And, you know, it's one of my wife's favorites then, one of my wife's favorites now.
Right.
And so she was laying on the couch. I was sitting on one end of the couch. She's laying on the couch. Rob is sitting in a chair and we're watching Attack of the Clones. And she's eating her white fudge Oreos. I think I remember it was about the time that that the changeling's damsel tries to assassinate Padme with little worm things and little slug things, and right. they chase her through Coruscant and then into a bar and whatnot. It was about during that time period that my wife started complaining. She wasn't feeling good.
Oh boy!
She needed to go to the doctor. Do you know why?
If I may make a wild guess, and I'm
make the guess.
Blown out, I believe she may have been going into labor.
Yeah, she kind of was, because she was over 8 months pregnant with our first child. And that was that happened on the 19th of November, 18 years ago, and he wasn't born until after midnight. So this Friday, my oldest child, my firstborn, he will be 18 years old.
Holy smokes, sir, dude.
Sir, as of Friday, I will have a legal adult child.
Dude, and that's nuts.
I know that he doesn't listen to the podcast, but he does know that it exists, and he does like to point at various points that he sees it in his YouTube feed of stuff. And
that's great.
I think he does follow it as well to help give us numbers of people following.
Yeah.
So he does get the notification whenever it comes up.
Yeah.
And he constantly asks me if I'm sitting in front of the computer, he asks me if I'm doing a podcast. I'm like, dude, the microphone's not here. Of course, I'm not doing the podcast. But point is, I just wanted to make that mention. It's just kind of, I mean, I don't know if we mentioned it during the podcast, but I turned 40 years old over the summer.
Yeah.
I already was feeling kind of that moment of, all right, I'm 40 now. I'm in that, I'm hitting that age. Of course, any Zennial listening is going to either have already been 40, be 40, or on the way to 40. So, it's coming for you, sir. It's coming.
Yeah,
you
know, I know.
You don't got much long left.
Nope. I don't.
But you don't have the 18 year old kid. And so it's just kind of a moment of, I kept a kid alive up to adulthood. I feel kind of good about myself in that. And he's not only alive, but, you know, no prison, no suspensions from school, no drugs and alcohol. So I feel pretty good about that.
I was going to say, not you haven't just raised a child to an adult, but a good adult.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, that's the accomplishment the right there. Yeah.
For the most part. I mean, he is a pain in the ass, but what kids aren't. But anyway, that was just kind of my, I just wanted to just be able to say something about it, have it down somewhere of my pride and my feeling of greatness of not even for what I've done, just for the fact that I have a kid that's going to be 18. That's just amazing.
Yeah.
It really is.
Man. Well, congratulations, sir.
Well, I'll accept them for him because,
yeah.
I mean, my part of it was at least the creation of him, my part of it was very, very minimal. And then I didn't, you know, I've helped him live his life, but he still lived his life. So he gets much credit for that. But anyway, that's just me wanting to do my little dad thing. I'm sorry y'all had to suffer through the dad moment.
No.
We have those.
No, that's totally worth it, man. That's good.
We have those. So
absolutely.
Now, complete left turn.
Yes, definitely.
So we discussed the story. You said it was last year.
Yeah, it was sometime last
year.
Where
we discussed the story about I think this is the one that our friend from South America even commented on. Right, we had a guy that was commenting on this very podcast.
Yes,
huge Def Leppard fan from South America and was commenting on the podcast on YouTube, and Mike was able to give him a few more pieces of information about what went down. And this is a podcast that was about Def Leppard and Taylor Swift and them having to, let me see if I can paraphrase this correctly, them not owning the rights to the original recordings for their first so many albums.
Right.
And so they had to, if they wanted rights, they had to re-record the albums completely. They could own that version of it, but they still didn't get to own their other version.
Of course.
Because either the studio or somebody else owned the original versions.
Essentially, that's it.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Basically, a quick summary of what we're talking about. So most young acts... Young bands, like when they start, you know, they're 20, 16. I think Taylor Swift's like 15 years old when she started. So she was obviously still living under her parents. I'm not necessarily sure if that's a major part of this. But basically, when young musical acts start, when they're hot, when they're roaring to go and they're starting to get popular, they sign contracts with record labels. And these contracts include a lot of quid pro quo kind of setups, a lot of tit for tat. But one of the biggest ones is the musician or the artist will require a facility or a means to record their music so that it can be distributed, duplicated, and sent off to the masses, right? Well, they have to sign with a label to do that. And the label will then say, okay, well, if we're recording all this stuff for you and we're hiring the engineers and we're duplicating it and we're selling it for you and we're making sure that people know who you are because they're promoting the artists too, they're doing a lot of stuff for them. One of the things that they require so that they have the freedom to do this is the rights to what are called the master recordings of your musical work. What those are the actual recordings on tape or on hard disk or what have you of the original performances that are recorded on tape in the studio when you are making a record. And it's not just the one songs that it's not just the singles or the best versions of songs that get on the CD that end up getting duplicated. We're talking everything. We're talking B-sides, extra outtakes, all the little fun stuff that if it happens to be recorded on tape, the record label owns it as if it is theirs. And that's part of the deal. What they do is they cut a deal with the artist and say, you are providing us with this. We are going to pay you to go perform. We're going to pay you to let people know, you know, you go out there and be the face. And in the meantime, what's going to happen is over time, we may be able to set ourselves up or we may be able to set you up to get those recordings back. But you have to essentially sell those performances to us first, and then we will pay you a piece off of what we own of those. And eventually, when things get later on down the line, sometimes the artist can negotiate for the rights to those masters back, and not just the tapes themselves physically, but the right to own those creations. So that's where we get into this. That's essentially the start of the story. Taylor Swift, just like Def Leppard, did this. Every pretty much young artist, for the most part, does this. One of the most famous artists that did this was the Beatles, and the rights to their masters was an absolute disaster of sales, auctioning. Michael Jackson outbid Paul McCartney. Paul McCartney was pissed and ended up buying Thriller, and there was all this kind of stuff that happened all over the place. Because these masters go out to market. They become available after a certain amount of time. Well, Taylor Swift's been around for a little while. Was she breaking like 2007 or something like that? And I know that sounds like a short period of time, but Taylor Swift is like coming up on like, I think she's like 28 now, and she was 15 when she broke. So it's been a while. She's been a pop star for a long time. Yeah. Now, one of the things that we were talking about, you know what? I'm going to go through all of this and kind of set everything up, okay? And then I'm going to explain what she is going to do. And this actually has a confirm on that. So long story short, Taylor Swift was signed to a record label called Big Machine Records, and they had all the rights to her masters. Well, I believe she eventually left Big Machine and started doing stuff on her own because she got big enough to do that, and she got rich off of the piece of the pie that she was making from all the work she was doing. She wasn't making all of it. The record label was probably making most of that, because part of what you do in the record negotiation contract is you actually start paying back money that the record label says you owe to them before you actually are able to negotiate and make enough. Like, part of your funds go back to paying back the record label, plus they own the masters, which does sound like a raw deal. And in some instances, it can be. This is why you need a lawyer when you sign on, to make sure that you don't get completely hosed in your opening contract. But a lot of people are new at this when they get it. Such is the case with Taylor. So her first six albums, I believe, were on Big Machine Records. Essentially, she had a manager who was kind of a dick. And this guy's name is Scooter Braun.
I commented this before.
Yeah.
Just saying, if you know some dude whose name is Scooter Braun and he's not a douchebag, he's probably the Antichrist. It's the end of the world. You need to kill him.
Right, right. Hey, look, man, I can almost agree with that. That sounds like a douchey name. But, I mean, I'm not going to completely... No, okay. I'm not going to talk shit on his name. I'm going to talk shit on his actions right now, because he's a piece, dude. I'm going to tell you. So,
again, but, I mean, it's... I'm a firm believer that there is a balance between nature and nurture. You know, when it comes to raising a child, there is a balance. There are some people that just by their nature are, you know, a certain type of person. There are some people that the effect of nurture, the parents can either lessen the effect of, say, a person that's just kind of a douchey person to begin with. They can maybe lessen that effect, or they can increase it, or they can take a person that's not douchey and make them douchey by being douchey parents to the person. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So I think there's some balance in that, but I think one of the starts in that, and there are people who will comment that I am I'm maybe the wrong person to say something like this, just because, and I'm not going to say their names here on the podcast. If you notice, for the most part, Mike and I avoid saying our spouses' names, and I don't say my children's names necessarily on the podcast, not because they're secret or anything, but because it's just, you know, they're not necessarily one day, if we're lucky and some, you know, more people than the like five people or whatever that listen to this, might listen to this, and we might become partial public figures. I mean, Mike has been a public figure to some extent with his various bands, far more than I've ever been a public figure. So it's possible that one day that could happen, and we don't necessarily want to have our families worrying about their names being known in that situation.
Right.
So anyway, if people the people that know the name of my kids might say that I really don't have room to comment on this, but I believe that I do. And that's when the first starting thing that you do for your kid, the name that you give your kid, that right there is part of that nurture program where if you give your kid a crap name, you're just inviting if
you're feeding the stigma that comes with that name.
If you name your kid Brock, especially if your family's last name is Hudson, and you name him Brock Hudson, what kind of a name is that anyway? Movie reference for everybody.
Right.
But anyway, I mean, there are just some names that, like, you hear somebody with that name and you're like, really?
Right.
Like seriously, Chad. I mean, that's just why would you name your kid Chad? What is wrong with you people? You name your kid Scooter?
Yeah, okay. And your last name is what, Braun? Braun, Braun. I'm pretty sure Scooter has to be like a nickname. I don't know his actual legal name, but at the same time, this could be even worse, cuz here's the deal. This guy goes by the name Scooter. There's one thing where it's not your choice cuz your parents give you that name. But if this guy's just like,
name.
My name's Scooter, and that's my my professional name.
This is his professional name.
And he's not a public figure in regards to, like...
Well, I mean, the thing is, he's not the kid of a celebrity, so you can't name the kid. It's not like his parents were like, I'm going to name you Pilot, or I'm going to name you Apple, or I'm going to name you Blue. You know what I mean?
No, get this, though. Think about it this way.
All of those, by the way, official names of celebrity kids.
Yes, this is true. That's absolutely true.
The pilot
but
one,
get this.
The pilot one is even worse because his name, that kid's name is Pilot Inspector. And Inspector has a K in it. And it's not supposed to have a K in it.
Who the fuck did that to their kid?
Jason Lee.
Jason Lee? You're fucking kidding me.
No, I'm serious. Jason Lee's kid's name was Pilot Inspector.
My God. Oh, he's gonna fucking hate his dad. Oh.
I mean,
or at least he's
really,
gonna hate his name. Dad's gotta be fucking, his dad's cool as shit, but I am confused by that name.
Well, I mean, his dad is super rich for being both an actor and like probably
was he like a professional skateboarder or something like that too?
At one time he was like the second best skateboarder in the world.
Oh shit, I didn't know that.
He just happened to be alive at the same time as Tony Hawk. So it was really hard to be the first best, you know, to be the best skateboarder in the world.
Right. You know? Hell of a set of shoes to fill.
Yeah, I mean, how many video games does Tony Hawk have?
Oh, Jesus. He's getting remasters now.
Yeah, how many video games does Jason Lee have?
Right.
This is the reason. This is the thing. You know, it doesn't matter if you're the second best in the world.
Right.
You're not the best. You don't get the video games. What happens to you is some fat guy from New Jersey puts you in his movies. Which, I mean, it's really not that bad.
No, because I love him and all the stuff he does. I did not know that, though. Man, that's crazy. Okay, so we're going to move on from that. But looking at that, like, just quick commentary on this name. This is his name he uses as an executive. Like, it's not even a stage name for an actor or a musician. No, he's a manager. Like,
he's
that weird.
He's a producer, right?
Yeah, he's a producer. He's a manager. He now owns a record label. And, you know, he's a businessman. Like, that's what he is, man. His life's work is owning things. Like, that's his kind of deal, you know. Far fetched for it to be that his name is Scooter. Jesus. Okay. So, anyways, getting back to it here. So they had a bad falling out, and the rumor is that apparently Scooter was a pretty abusive dude. Not like physically abusive, but, you know, mentally and verbally. He was just kind of an all-out dick. Like, I don't have the exact details, but from everything we're hearing from Taylor and apparently some other hearsay, Scooter was a total dick.
So basically we can assume the music producers that work with young blonde proteges are probably just going to be abusive assholes, right?
I mean, there's a couple of them now that I've seen. Yeah, there's a couple of them now that I've heard of. Like Dr. Luke was, I think, the big one with, Kesha. That's right, Kesha. Now one that there's a bunch of bullshit going on with Britney's dad too. Like the freaking
leave Britney alone,
dude. Sorry. She is not doing well. We're getting too far off on the tangent here. So,
bringing the Tay Tay.
Yeah. Okay. So let's get back to Tay Tay. So he was a dick. Okay. And it's well known publicly at this point that he was a dick. So back when Taylor amassed enough money to buy her masters back from her label was very apprehensive to selling it to her. And she didn't understand why. She's like, I've got all the money here. It's in the contract. It's here. You guys need to take my fucking money so I can get my masters. I want my masters. And essentially, the record label held out, didn't respond, and then all of a sudden, a public statement that Big Machine Records, who had Taylor's music, was sold to this same guy, Scooter Braun. Okay? So, total, dick move, total coup on Scooter's part, because they were negotiating with Scooter to be bought by him without selling the masters to Taylor and also not telling her about it. So it gets publicly put out that Scooter Braun now owns this label and Taylor is just left in the wind, dude. Like, she's got nothing she can do about it. So she's hella pissed. Now, she publicly announced at one point last year that she would be she basically had the capability to re-record her original six albums so that she could make money on the performance royalties for those albums. Now, songwriting royalties? No, they're still owned by that record label. However, she gets a much larger chunk of the money if the single is sold and put out that's of the newer performance. Because it's her recording of it and she can do whatever she needs to with it. And she can hire all the right engineers to reproduce and recreate these songs. Or maybe she can do new twists on them, remixes, all this other bullshit. Like, she can hire the best people to do this. She has all the power in the world right now and fucking go for it. Like, that's what I say. But the biggest catch about it is the fact that it's only been 12 to 13 years since the first album came out. Her most recent one was, what, like 2 years ago, I think, or something like that. So, this was something that was on her. So that's one of the ones that she doesn't have to do. But the album like before that was part of like her revamp where she went like full on pop star, like that one's part of it. But the issue comes down to the fact that she has all this old material that she wants control of, and since she can't get it from the label, and it got sold to basically her arch nemesis at this point, she has no choice but to do this. But it was recently discovered today, it was announced today, that Scooter Braun has taken those masters, which, by the way, another side point, I do apologize for going back and forth. Essentially, Taylor at one point started contacting Scooter because she still wanted her masters. Scooter has essentially refused to sell them to her because of all the shit-talking that had been going on beforehand. True or not, I personally think it's true. That's my personal opinion. And it seems like the general consensus, so I'm going to say it's true. But okay. Essentially, the thing is she was trying to negotiate buying her masters from Scooter at one point. And she's super pissed that the masters were sold to Scooter, or the label was sold to Scooter right out. That completely undercut her from her agreement on her label. So more information's come out. Essentially, in this like year and a half, 2 year span since the label was sold to Braun, today it's been announced that Scooter Braun sold Taylor Swift's masters for her first six albums. And it was for like a lump sum of like over $300 million
to who?
Now the first thing I saw was an investment firm that he sold it to. Now, I am not like really majorly into business, but the receiver of these, the buyer is not specifically known. But there is a private equity I'm reading a statement right now. It's a private equity group that purchased her music. So it was sold to a private equity group who is unannounced. But Taylor clapped back today with a tweet. So the first thing she wanted to say was a full statement. I'm just going to read the statement because this is nuts. And then I'm going to read the letter that she sent to this private equity group back when the music was sold, because the music apparently was sold like a week and a half, 2 weeks ago. October 28th was when it was apparently sold. So here's the statement. I'm just going to read it. I wanted to check in and update you guys. As you know, for the past year, I've been actively trying to regain ownership of my master recordings. With that goal in mind, my team accepted to enter into negotiations with Scooter Braun. Scooter's team wanted me to sign an ironclad NDA stating that I would never say another word about Scooter Braun unless it was positive, even before we could even look at the financial records of BMLG, which is always the first step in a purchase of this nature. So I would have to sign a document that would silence me forever before I could even have a chance to bid on my own work. My legal team has said this is absolutely not normal, and they've never seen an NDA like this presented unless it was to silence an assault accuser by paying them off. He would never even quote my team a price. These master recordings were not for sale to me. A few weeks ago, my team received a letter from a private equity company called Shamrock Holdings. Oh, she put the name out. Letting us know that they had bought 100% of my music, videos, and album art from Scooter Braun. This was the second time my music had been sold without my knowledge. The letter told me that they wanted to reach out before the sale to let me know, but that Scooter Braun had required that they make no contact with me or my team, or the deal would be off. As soon as we started communication with Shamrock, I learned that under their terms, Scooter Braun will continue to profit off my old musical catalog for many years. I was hopeful and open to the possibility of a partnership with Shamrock, but Scooter's participation is a non-starter for me. I recently began re-recording my older music, and it has already proven to be both exciting and creatively fulfilling. I have plenty of surprises in store. I want to thank you guys for supporting me through this ongoing saga, and I can't wait for you to hear what I've been dreaming up. I love you guys, and I'm just going to keep cruising, as they say. Taylor. P.S. For transparency and clarification, I have included the letter of response I sent on October 28, 2020 to the private equity group who purchased my music. At this point, that seems like pretty much all of the information. She added the letter. I don't have to read that. But essentially,
I have some information.
Yeah.
Shamrock Holdings was originally created by...
Oh, are you looking it up while I was reading?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
It is a private equity firm founded as the Roy E. Disney Family's Investment Firm.
Shut up.
The Disney family remains its sole investor. It is fully owned by the estate of Roy E. Disney. They also own Bass Brothers production royalties for Eminem.
Whoa.
Catalog of dance label Ohm Records.
Oh, wow.
Songwriting catalog of music producers Stargate, Sony, ATV Music Publishing.
Wow.
Of music producer Stargate. So that's a whole different thing. Hmm. But yeah, they own a lot of stuff like that.
Yeah. So that's kind of their deal.
This is more Disney just trying to buy everything.
Yeah, that's crazy, dude. I had no idea. Oh,
yeah,
God.
I thought that would interest
you. Now it's Taylor Swift versus Disney. And this would make sense because they could throw a bunch of Taylor Swift's music. See, if they own it, they could throw a bunch of Taylor Swift's music, her original masters, right into all their movies and into their TV shows or advertisements or whatever. They're going to make bank like
movies,
mad.
TV shows, advertisements.
Totally.
all over the parks.
Yep. So here's the catch on what she said specifically. This is a thing that she was threatening to do, and she had announced that she was going to continue to do this anyway. And I say more power to her. She announced specifically right now that she will, and she has already started, re-recording her older music just for the sake of being able to have something that's hers. So now the fan base, now that she's told this fan base this, the fact that she's only 13 years older than when she recorded it, and it's going to sound drastically similar. This is an entirely different thing from when Def Leppard did it, because they were 30 years removed from the last time they were doing it. These were guys that were trying to recreate music from when they were 20, when they're 50. That's a whole different ballgame. She's like not even 30, and she's re-singing stuff from when she was 15. She's going to sound so similar, it's not even funny. And she's going to be able to either completely reproduce the original sound, because, dude, it's all been digitally done. Like, there's places you can go to get the same exact equipment. She's got those notes. She has those receipts. She knows the studio and the engineers that went to that area. She can get the information she needs to recreate this stuff. Well, and again, it sounds like carbon copy that shit. She could totally do that.
Well, yeah, and again, the vocals would be pretty much the same, because her voice hasn't changed enough. When Joe Elliott trying to do that all those years later, he can't hit those notes anymore.
He couldn't, but he did. I will tell you this, Joe Elliott did a hell of a job, but it didn't sound the same, and it definitely sounded very different. It got some props from the original producer of those tracks. But it's not, it definitely isn't the same, for sure.
Yeah.
You know? However, with Taylor, it's a whole different ballgame. And to answer a question on the podcast for somebody that was actually asking this last time, or the commenter, I can't remember his name right now. There was a gentleman.
Oh, South American friend?
Yes. There was a gentleman who was stating in a comment on our video on YouTube that it could technically be considered plagiarism. Although plagiarism itself is not, here's the thing about the twist. Okay. Plagiarism in itself is not a, it's not a, a, plagiarism itself is when you are somebody who is not the original person claiming that you wrote something originally and not crediting the original author. Most of the time it's done in literature or poetry or what have you. In theory, technically, plagiarism would have to be, plagiarism would be if Britney Spears recorded a Taylor Swift song and then say that she wrote it, okay? That's plagiarism. Taylor Swift, it's already known Taylor Swift has written or recorded or what have you, because all that stuff is well documented. Her doing a re-recording, say that again?
I was going to add the recent court cases with Led Zeppelin have proven that even if you have guitar riffs or musical motifs that sound similar,
yes,
or could be inspired by one another, there's no legal standing to try to claim anything from that. I mean,
yeah, exactly.
Which makes sense. One may become famous and the other one not, and they be of similar sound.
Right.
To try to claim anything on that, one of my favorite kind of parody bands, joke bands, Axis of Awesome. They're an Australian band.
Yes,
you know about them. I've shown them to you.
Yes,
they do a song called Four Chord Song, where they kind of show how songs are written with the same chord progression of just four chords.
Right.
There's of course the whole debacle of Canon in D, which the first song comes to my mind with Canon in D is Blues Traveler's Hook. But there was the song that Vitamin C did back in the late 90s. So that was like at every graduation ever. And so Canon in D is very simple chord progression. I think it's, I think it's maybe 5-6 chords in a specific progression. And it's something that's been around for hundreds of years,
right?
As that progression. So there's going to be many songs that have that chord progression. It's just what you do with that chord progression that makes it something, different. I think I was looking at, what was it? Avenged Sevenfold's Dear God.
Yeah.
And, I can't even remember what the other song was. that, again, basically the same chord progression, just played slightly differently, different amount of time with each chord, and, you know, the lyrics different enough to make them completely different songs that sounded similar but not the same. So there's precedent set in the idea that you could have the same sounding music roughly, but it'd be two completely different things, as long as you don't use the exact track from something else, a la Vanilla Ice claiming that his bass line was not from Under Pressure.
Right.
You know?
Exactly. That in itself is plagiarism.
If you're gonna sample a person, you give them the credit for the sample, because
exactly
that's their stuff. So as long as you're not lifting the exact track, it's your, you know, or playing the exact track, it's your version of it, you know.
Yeah, exactly. So the catch with this, that's exactly, like, you pretty much hit the nail on the head. The catch with this is that she has to essentially intentionally state that she wrote it and she didn't write it in order for plagiarism to take effect, and it wouldn't. Yeah. And this is also not parody. This isn't anything like that. She's written this music, or whoever has written that music along with her, it doesn't mean that she doesn't have the license to re-record and re-release her material. That's her call. That's her catch to it. She could take that and distribute it and do whatever she needs to do in order to do that. That's her right. But yeah, when it comes down to it, like, at this point, just like with anybody that's come into this problem, there are multiple reasons why people re-record their material, you know? The Jeff Lynne from ELO just did his entire, like, I think it was a 3 or 4 years ago, he re-recorded his entire band's debut album by himself. Because he wasn't necessarily satisfied with the original release in the 70s. So he decided to re-record the whole thing for a 40th anniversary re-release or whatever. There's plenty of reasons why people do this kind of stuff, but I consider that Taylor's reasoning to be extremely valid in this point, especially being the fact that this is the only way that she can enjoy her music being released and be able to make any semblance of money to the degree that she should be making from those original tracks.
So just out of curiosity,
yeah,
if the manager of the band, who's also the wife of the lead singer, has albums re-recorded because the guitarist and bassist that played on the albums that were originally recorded badmouthed the singer and the wife. She has them re-recorded with new artists so that, and those being the only ones that are distributed, so that that guitarist and bassist don't get royalties anymore. You consider that a valid reason?
Dick move whether or not that's the case, but they have the capability of doing that and they own the music. So technically, yes, I would consider that valid. Whether or not that's accepted by the general public, and I know who you're talking about.
You would agree it was kind of a dick move.
Oh, it's a dick move for sure, but that doesn't mean that they can't do it. Like, under any legal sense, definitely. And I understand what you're talking about. And yeah, that was a dick move. But yeah. If anybody's...
Did I get the story right?
I believe you did. Okay. I thought it wasn't shit talking. I thought that they were looking for royalties. Was what it was. They were looking for more performance royalties because of a re-release, and she's like, well, fine, fuck you, I'm just gonna have it re-recorded then.
That may have been the issue.
We're talking about is which one was it, Blizzard of Oz, right? Or I can't remember which one it was, but it's Ozzy Osbourne record.
I'm not sure which album it was.
Yeah, it was an Ozzy Osbourne record for like a decade later or something like that. The artists that performed on that record were looking for more royalties because it was being re-released. And basically Sharon Osbourne was just like, no, like, we paid you for your performance, that's all you get. And they were getting all pissed off, so she decided to just have other artists re-record it for them, pay them whatever she needed to pay them so they could make all the money off the record without any legal issues. But I don't know if that ever got solved or handled or what have you. I don't know what happened.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I said, dick move, but you have the right to do it legally. So it's neither here nor there for me to say. But in this case, especially the moral sense, dude, she's the artist, she's the writer, she's the, yeah. I mean, and she came with her own written material. Like, she is not like somebody who hired 5 or 6 writers to write one hit to make sure that the B-sides on the album are written by, you know, one album written by 15 people. that has 12,000 different producers or whatever on them. This is not that type of a scenario. Taylor Swift is one of the few pop artists that write their own material almost exclusively. There are teams of songwriters and things that she's learned in the studio in her time in her career where she's learned how to work with, you know, different producers and different songwriters. But she comes in with the skeleton of that material most of the time. And a lot of the time, yeah, are you kidding me? She'd be able to sit behind a console and mix the damn thing. I'm about positive. She knows what she's doing.
I can say there are a few songs of hers that actually sound like they are not written by her and sound like they're written by some of the these kind of pop music writing factories.
Yeah.
That the one song Trouble sounds like it was written by a pop music writing factory, and right. It is.
And yeah, there are those ones that are like that. Don't get me wrong. That's kind of part of the business, especially on a high level business that she's you know, one of the top level artists right now. She's going to be working with other people like that. And she also, with something like that, dude, she has to be convinced that it's good. She has to be convinced it's going to be profitable. You know what I mean? Like, it takes a lot in order to decide to do that. But now she's going to go back to Trouble and she's going to record it again because it's worth that much.
I do want to add, this is just a personal feeling of mine. I personally have a little less respect for artists when they have to have that level of collaboration with other songwriters when they're not able to kind of do the songwriting themselves. I can still see them as good performers, but necessarily as songwriters and musicians, it makes me have a little less respect for them. It's not saying I have none, but it makes me have a little bit less. But then it also makes me have a little more respect for artists like Sia, who not only writes her own music, she writes music for like everybody else. And the songs that she records for herself are stuff that other artists have decided they don't want to record. And then she sings them and makes like huge hits out of them. Sia's just freaking awesome.
I think that's what happened with Rihanna too. Rihanna was her own songwriter for a while, and she actually tried to sell the song Umbrella. She tried to sell it to, I think, Sprint, and they wouldn't take it. And so she just recorded it and released it as a single, and it became this humongous hit completely out of nowhere. And that's what launched her.
No, sir.
Or something like that.
No, sir.
Well, which one was it?
Umbrella is... I do not believe that she wrote that.
There was somebody that wrote that. I thought it was her. I can't look anything up right now. If I touch my recording computer, it's going to go haywire. It could be touchy. I got old equipment.
Jay-Z actually wrote it.
Well, shit.
And it was originally written with Britney Spears in mind. Jay-Z, Tricky Stewart, and Kook Harrell wrote that.
Wow.
But it's interesting to find different songs that different people have written for different people. That end up, somebody refuses to do it. Somebody else decides to get it instead. It becomes a hit for them.
Yeah.
They feel bad for refusing to do it. Britney, the Umbrella is one of those songs that I know Britney considers, one that she missed. I knew it was originally offered to Britney, but I did not know for sure who had written that one.
Oh,
but
wow.
Like I said, some help in the songwriting thing I can give a little bit credit to when you bring in people to give you a little bit of help, but I still have more respect for artists that do their own stuff, which makes me harken back to one of my favorite pop singers of all time that wrote her first album completely by herself with no help at all. And was, I think, the youngest person to be nominated for awards for that first album. And that would be, Debbie Gibson.
Oh, wow.
I just want to throw that back out there.
Nice. I did not know that.
She was 16 years old when she wrote her first album.
Wow.
That album was Electric Youth, by the way.
I am not familiar with it. I've never been big into Debbie Gibson. But not to say that's fantastic, though. You know?
I always have been because she's freaking awesome.
But anyways.
Also hot as hell still to this day.
but yeah, anyway, like going back to this, like that's essentially my two cents on it is like, do it. Like you've built an empire on your own practically. And this is just more of that type of, sorry, this move by Braun on both accords is total bullshit. And I'm glad that she's fighting back.
That's the new news, right?
Yeah, that's the new news.
The new news is just the fact that that now we know that Braun sold her music while he was in the supposedly in the process of trying to work things out with her. He went and sold her music.
Basically, he was forcing her to sign an NDA, saying nothing but positive things about him in public from that moment forward, before he would even let her look at the possibility of purchasing the music. He was holding her musical archives over her head as a power move, because his business is so shit, and I'll say it right now, his way of doing business is such shit that he has to legally require people not to talk shit about him to make sure that he saves his reputation as a business person. Who the fuck does that? That's the part that I have a problem with. Right? That's a dick move.
I can tell you somebody who does that.
I know exactly who you're talking about.
I could tell you somebody who does that, but I won't say their name.
Yep. I know exactly who you're talking about, and I am right there with you. It's such a move that's very similar.
I'm going to say this. I haven't said their name for 4 years.
Good.
Now, most people hopefully can understand who I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And if not, I really don't care.
Good. Leave it ambiguous, because I ain't going to say it either.
That person requires that NDAs are signed for everything that person is involved in, because that's the only way that person can stop people from talking about how shit that person is.
Dude, right?
See, I'm not even using gender pronouns.
I'm pretty sure that if you can't glean this information at this point, I'm sorry for you.
if you can't glean this information at this point, then you're fired.
Well done.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I have talents, many of them.
All right. Well, that was pretty much it on that update.
Well, no, it's a good update. It tells us where the story's gone further, and basically all of her recourse has been taken away, and here goes Disney again, buying up whatever they can.
I cannot believe that.
Now, they're not just buying our childhood now, they're buying the millennials' childhood.
Right?
It's just like, we're going to own everything that you hold sacred.
That's everything. Crazy. Okay, I've got to do like a video on this or something. This is just too much for me to stay mum on. That's nuts. Absolutely nuts.
Disney's going to be the evil empire that controls everything.
I love the fact that she had to wait until the stuff was sold and the deal was finished, because now it can't be stopped, right? She waited like a week or two to make sure that everything was transferred over. Do you have it? Okay, cool. Are they going to get it back? No, absolutely not. Okay, I'm going to go public with this then. And then she just went for it. I love the fact that she was like, okay, cool. I'm going to kick him in the balls once for you. Okay. Like that's, or for herself rather. That's great.
And that's actually a good cautionary tale to take away from this.
Yeah.
So I think sometimes when things happen, we want to be reactionary and do something immediately. We want to say something immediately.
Yeah.
Or we want public figures to be reactionary and say something immediately. And sometimes it's better.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's better just to let things wait and marinate for a little while.
Yeah.
Because you might get a public figure that says something stupid like, you know, in our modern world with COVID and whatnot, that criticizes somebody for wearing a mask all the time and, you know, won't stand close to people, has to wear a mask, freaking out about it all the time. They say that on like a Tuesday. Mm-hmm. And then on Friday, they find out that they now have contracted COVID-19. You know what I mean?
Right.
That idea that sometimes it's better just to let things marinate, because sometimes the universe has the universe gives you the opportunity to have at least a tiny smidgen of justice done if you just let things run their course. Sometimes you just have to sit back and let it happen, because then, you know, the story works out a little bit better. I'm just saying, you know, just universe happens that way sometimes. Was that vague or was that a little too clear?
No, I think it toes the line. I think you're good.
Okay, I like to do that. Toe the line. All right. Anyway, Mike, people are listening to us. People are wondering, hopefully not wondering, they're able to figure out what you know, things I'm talking about.
Yeah.
They're able to put five and six together and go get a Slurpee.
Right.
But hopefully that one didn't go over your head. Where, Mike, are they listening to us? Where would they be finding us?
Well, you could be listening to us at our website, thezenialchronicles.com or zenchron.com, spelled X-E-N-C-H-R-O-N. That's where our main podcast is at. It's also available on all of the platforms. Pretty much, we're on TuneIn, we're on Spotify, we're on Google or YouTube, we're on Apple, we're every which way.
Oh, hey.
Yeah.
Hey. If you Google the Zenial Chronicles, we have two pages of stuff.
What?
Yeah.
What? No way.
Yeah, you Google the Zenial Chronicles, and there's like a page and a half. It's not entirely two pages.
That's cool.
But yeah.
That's
and
dope.
It's like our Spotify and our website and YouTube and Facebook.
Yeah.
You can literally just Google us, and we're there. We come up.
That's amazing. I love it. That's yeah, awesome.
Kind of cool.
Hell yeah.
Means, like, there are people that can Google and find my picture, which is
how's it especially feel being a public figure, James?
Yeah, especially because I'm trying to lick you or something. It's weird.
Well, you're the one who decided to take a picture like that.
I thought maybe that you tasted faintly of strawberries. It's a redhead thing.
Oh, okay. Anyway. That's what it was. But anyways, you can catch us on any of the other on most of the major podcast platforms. We're also available on Facebook and Twitter at Zenchron. And you can also find us on YouTube as well. If you search for the Zenial Chronicles on YouTube, you can find us. And if you're listening to us on YouTube or watching, technically it's more just like a still image for these. But if you're listening to us, please go ahead and click the like button on the video and hit the subscribe button as well. And there's one more thing for them to do, James. What is that?
Click the bell.
That's right. Click the bell to make sure that we get notified when you click subscribe, but you get notified when we put out a video if you click that bell.
Yeah, because the only way we get notified is when James wakes up on Thursday morning and is like, wait, did the podcast get put out? Sends a message to Mike, did the podcast get put out? Oh, fuck. Hold on. Give me a minute.
Hey, it only happens a few times, okay? It's not often.
That's what she said. Anyway, while you're there, while you're checking us out on YouTube and clicking all the things you need to click on and whatnot, first of all, watch some cat videos because those always make people laugh.
Always.
Or watch some fail videos because those make people laugh.
Yes.
But also, go check out for me, if you will, Chronosode Games, which is one of Mike's other channels on YouTube, one of the other things, he's really involved in. That's him and his wife playing video games in the chronological order of the universe of the game, not in the order that the games come out. Although there's been some whimsy to that because they were supposed to be playing the Zelda games, and then they went into Luigi's Mansion and then Red Dead Redemption 2, and then I don't even know what the heck they're doing now. I lost.
Oh, no. We played Red Dead Revolver. No, we don't play all games from one franchise in and of itself only because it would take such a long time. So we kind of like to mix it up to make sure that we're tackling multiple franchises at once.
Ah, okay. That's more explanation.
Yeah.
And then once you're done sifting through all of that, or if you're just not necessarily a fan of watching people play video games, just like, you know, you're not a fan of watching sports or something else, which it's legitimate, same type of thing. We can have a discussion about that another time. You can also check out Mike's other page on there, Ruling Note Music.
Yes.
Where Mike puts on his music producer and music maker hat and talks about musical history, talks about production tips, he puts together different songs and videos on there, just all kinds of music related stuff. Worth checking out both of those. Heck, you can even subscribe and click the bell on both of those so that you got stuff to do, stuff to watch, stuff to keep you interested. And if you don't like any of those things, go back to the cat videos.
Indeed.
Because those are fun too.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I like the cat videos.
I can tell.
I also like the one. Hey, cat videos are hilarious, especially when cats try to jump and don't make the jump.
Those are cute.
It's freaking hilarious because like they're ready to do a jump, up on the counter, and the counter's like 4 feet, and they maybe clear a foot and smack into the drawers. That's hilarious, man. Hilarious. Anyway, thank you all for listening. We'll be back next week, and next week will be most likely a Thanksgiving discussion episode. So if you're going to listen to that one, you'll be listening to it on Thanksgiving because it will come out on Thanksgiving. If you have your family with you, listen to it with them. I promise it won't be family friendly. Anyway, thank you. Thank you again for listening. We'll talk to you next week.
Yeah, have a good one.
Thank you for tuning in, friends. The journey continues next week.